Hey folks, this episode is once again about Bex's top surgery, so I wanted to give a content note. We're talking about what Bex would call weird medical shit, which includes surgery, intubation, drugs and anesthesia, blood, hospitals, and also some discussion of misgendering. So if any of that is tricky for you, feel free to skip this episode. Totally fine. Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I'm about to use my journalism skills by interviewing my pal about his top surgery. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I had top surgery 2 weeks ago.
Oh my god.
Coming up on 3 weeks.
I'm not sure at least when we're going to put this episode up, because we do have another one to maybe put up before then. I don't know. But chronologically, it was, you know, at least 2 weeks ago.
Time travel. My tits are gone. I don't know. They went away a while ago.
Yeah. So how are you feeling today? What's the update?
Today I'm feeling pretty good. More or less mentally and like my internal drive is more or less back to normal-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm ready for my life to get back into my routine. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit sore, and I still have a little bit less energy than, like, I'm used to. Mm-hmm. So I still have to take it easy. I definitely have, like, impairments to my mobility. I still have my drains in, and we're going to talk about those. They're fucking obnoxious. But I'm more or less feeling pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So you wanted to do an episode talking about, like, your hospital experience. And by the way, if anybody's listening to this and doesn't know what the fuck we're talking about, we did an episode a few weeks ago. I believe it's called Chester Day's News. Gosh, it took me a while to come up with that pun. And I thought about running it by you, and I think you were busy at that moment. And I was like, this is a risky choice.
It's delightful. It's great. I think I was probably sleeping at that point.
Probably, yeah.
Because that episode went up.
Oh, yeah. That's what was happening. Yeah. It was literally the day after and you were sleeping. Right. Yeah. So yeah. Go listen to that one if you're not sure what we're talking about. But so Bex got top surgery. We're going to talk about your hospital experience. So we woke up that day really, really early. I think.
Yeah,
it was fine. My alarm was set for like 5:45. It's always kind of actually exciting to get up super early on a day that something important is happening, I feel like. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I don't know, because whenever I always get up early for stuff like that, it's also I get up early for like travel and stuff, because you gotta get like the early flight so you can start your vacation. So, and I really liked that I didn't have to like wake up and stress all morning. Mm-hmm. And, like, I also wasn't allowed to eat after midnight, so I didn't have to, like, sit around all day not eating or drinking and just stressing out about this thing. Mm-hmm. It was also nice because that made me the first appointment in the day, which means there were no delays from prior surgeries.
Yeah.
Nothing, like, ran late or whatever, so I got there and they were like, all right, ready to go, let's go, come on. I was like, all right, shit.
Yeah, the most amazing thing to me was, like, how fast the whole process happened, because, like, my experience with medical bureaucracy of any kind is that everything takes forever and is later and longer than you were expecting it to be, and this actually took less time than their estimate to you.
Yeah, my surgery was scheduled for 10 a.m., and I was laying down in the OR, and I looked up at the clock, and it was, like, 9:34, and I was like, seriously, y'all? Shit, okay.
Very punctual.
Yeah.
Yeah, so was there anything interesting about the check-in experience? I'm just trying to go chronologically.
Yeah, so we got there. Actually, we should talk about before we left, like, what I brought with me, too. Because I wore what I wanted to come home in, because I didn't feel like bringing a ton of clothes, obviously. Yeah. So I wore sweatpants and a flannel that I could button up, because it's going to be a lot harder to, like, pull a shirt over your head, especially immediately after.
Mm-hmm.
But I did bring a change of underwear and socks, because I just wanted clean underwear. Like, I think that's fair.
Yeah.
And I brought with me, like, I had one single sheet document with all of the really important information on it that I needed, things I needed you to do for me and things I needed to know at a glance.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, like, notes on it for questions for my doctor and everything. So I had all of that and my Switch, because I expected to be in a fucking waiting room forever, but...
Your Nintendo Switch, we should clarify, not a kinky yes. Switch you brought with you to take care of your dominating and submitting needs. Although that would right. also be great.
Yeah, no, my Switch was at home, unfortunately.
Yeah. You did bring a sub with you, but that was me, and
yeah.
I don't know how helpful that is in a surgical situation.
So I checked in, sat down, you know, did paperwork, paid them, all that stuff. Sat down in the waiting room, and they called me almost immediately, I think, right? It was like, I don't know, maybe 5-10 minutes?
Yeah, pretty quick.
Yeah.
How did it feel to spend that much money? Was it, like, scary, or were you like, no, this is right, this is what this is for?
It wasn't scary, 'cause I wasn't, like, there wasn't... I feel like it's only scary if there's a chance that I'm like, oh, should I do this? And it was like, no, I'm like, this is... Right. Why I've been saving money, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it is weird seeing a number that high on, like, just a little credit card screen and swiping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not an experience I have often. That number had several digits.
Is that the most amount of money you've ever spent in one day?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Unless I'm talking, like, down payments on apartments and stuff.
Hmm.
It also wasn't everything. So I'm going to get billed separately for the anesthesiologist. The hospital might send me a bill, for, like, related costs and everything. It was, I think, just Blue Bond Langner's fee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, like, the sum total of the costs of surgery.
Mm-hmm. So when they called you in, they said to me and your dad, who were there, he'll be back in, like, 5 or 10 minutes or something. And then you were gone for, like, half an hour, and I checked my phone, and I saw that you were, like, liking some of my tweets. And your dad said something to me, like, wow, like, they really lied about it only being 5 or 10 minutes, right? And I was like, well, he's, like, liking my tweets, so I feel like he's probably not doing very much back there.
I was gonna say, like, I kept having these moments of, like, oh, like... Kate's just sitting out there with my dad, I guess. Like,
yeah, it was actually fine. I feel like your dad and I share the belief that, like, it's fine to be silent.
Yep.
Like, there, I think if I was there with, like, my mom for some reason, like, she would definitely be trying to, like, be chatty. But your dad was just chill. He would occasionally, like, show me something on his phone that he thought was funny or something. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like yeah. Him. I had, like, that just met him that day for the first time, and we were already at the comfortable silence level of friendship, I guess.
Yeah, I was a little worried about that. I was like, well, that's your day, I guess.
It was fine. I was, like, prepared, like, you know, I took inspiration from your preparation. I brought, like, books and my notebook and a podcast on my phone, like, because I had no idea how long we were going to be there or any of that shit. So
yeah,
better to be prepared.
Well, so what they had me doing was, like, they had me changing into the gown thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was wrestling with some nurse trying to get my lip ring out. And finally I was like, just give me gloves. I can do it. I just need gloves for the grip.
I was just picturing you actually, like, wrestling a nurse who's trying to get your lip ring out, and you're just like, no, leave it in.
I'm too emo for this.
I have to look cool when I get my top surgery. Fuck you.
But they tell you to take all of your piercings out, but particularly my lip ring. Like, every person who saw me was like, can that come out? I was like, yes, I just forgot. Jesus, just someone help me. Get me a mirror. I'll do it now.
Well, so what's the reason for that? Does it get in the way of the tubes? Because it's not even centered, right?
Right. Well, so this, yeah, I think it would get in the way of, because they do trach you. No, that's the wrong word.
Intubate.
I'm gonna say that again. Intubate. Yes. They don't cut my shit open. nope. Yeah, it's off center, but it does get in the way because they will intubate you when they put you under. And I actually had this weird numbness in the center of my lip for like days afterwards. And I think they had either my lip like pinched against my teeth or like one of the little clips or something.
Mm-hmm.
Gave me like kind of a fat lip, but yeah. But so it needs to be out of the way for that. But they tell you to take all the metal out, and I assume it's if something goes wrong and they need to put you in some sort of machine that can't handle metal.
Mm.
They don't want to have to think about that when they're, you know what I mean?
Right, that makes sense.
I would think if they're like, if we're admitting you, no metal in your body.
Mm-hmm.
So, because they also, they just asked if I had any other metal stuff, and I had to mention, like, my IUD, which I don't think I have the metal one, but again, mention just in case, don't put me in an MRI.
Yeah.
Oh,
God, I've never even thought about that. That's like something from a House MD episode. That's fucked up shit.
Yeah, I don't think, I think it's, I mean, IUDs are copper, and I don't know how magnetic copper is. I don't think it is. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't but think again, it would be like ripped out of your body, I say like these in that House episode. Because
just in case, I would rather, I watched too much House growing up as a kid to lie to doctors. Yeah. I'm like, I will tell you literally everything, whatever you want to know about me.
I feel like if you couldn't wear an IUD, wear an IUD, like it's a fucking accessory, but I feel like if you couldn't have an IUD in and get an MRI, we would probably know that. But also, like, I didn't know that until like a few years ago that you can't be on antibiotics and expect your birth control to continue working. So like, this information is not talked about as much as it should be.
It really isn't. But speaking of not wanting to lie to doctors, I also wanted to tell the anesthesiologist that I smoke.
Smoke weed, to be clear.
Yes. Yes. If I had smoked nicotine, I would have had to stop well before the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to talk to him about how much weed I smoke because I didn't know how much that's going to impact my anesthesia. Google told me to talk about it. And I wanted to anyway, but maybe not in front of my father. Like, you know, the man does know I smoke, but he really doesn't need to know exactly how much.
Mm-hmm.
So I, like, when the nurse, like, came in the back, I think it was only supposed to be 5 minutes because they were going to put the gown on me and they had me, like, pee in a cup or whatever. But then I was like, hey, like, you know, can you make sure the anesthesiologist talks to me before they come back here?
Mm-hmm.
And he was literally like, in the little cubby next door. So the nurse was like, yeah, I'll get him, and turned around and he was in the room with us, and she was like, here he is. He's like, I heard you, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he like thinks he's the cool anesthesiologist or what, but I was like, so like, I just wanted to mention that I smoke weed, and he's like, I don't care. But like other stuff, like do you do anything harder, like cocaine or anything like that? And I was like, no. And he was like, all right, that's fine. And I was like, but like I smoke weed. And he was like, yeah, whatever. And I was like, no, but like a lot of weed. Like, I don't know. And he was like, yeah, that's fine. It's okay. The most important thing, he told me, was to think about something happy when you're, like, going under. Think about something calm and that makes you feel good, like, kind of go to your happy place.
Right.
Which immediately my brain was like, oh, like when you're tripping. Like,
right, exactly. I think my friend Brent told me that about mushrooms, like when we've talked about doing shrooms together. Like, you have to be in a positive headspace, which, like, kind of sucks to hear as a person who has depression. As we talked about, I think, like, it's hard to find a positive headspace sometimes.
Yeah. But, like, it made sense to me, and I was like, all right, cool. And he was like, that's really all that matters. He's like, I'm going to do the thing, you're going to go under, whatever. And I've seen TV shows, I'm like, right, I'm going to count backwards from 10, you know, going to make it to, like, 7, and then I'm going to wake up in another room. Great. So we talked for a few minutes, and then he left, and then I think that's, after all that, is when y'all came back and waited with me for a little while.
Yeah.
And then my doctor came, and literally just with a Sharpie drew lines on my chest like an artist.
Yeah.
And, like, took her phone out and was like, hang on, I have to see if they're even. And was, like, looking through the camera on her phone and came back and was like, sorry, and, like, adjusted the lines. And I was like, seriously, take as long on this as you want. Like, I'm not rushing you on the chest that I'm going to have for the rest of my life.
It's like when your tattoo artist takes a long time to line up the stencil on your skin and you're like, don't even worry about it. Like, you do you.
Yeah. They're like, oh, sorry. And you're like, no, it's fine. Totally fine. Please keep working on that.
Yeah, perfectionism is good in this case.
Yeah. She, like, talked to me for a few minutes. And the doctors had told me, they were like, it's going to be quick. You're going to talk to the anesthesiologist quick, and you're going to talk to the doctor quick, and then you're just going to go in. So I was, like, really prepared for them to be, like, rushing, but they did take a second to be like, what do you want to talk about? What do you need to know? I didn't have a ton of questions at this point. I'm pretty prepared. So we talked for a second. She drew the lines on me to, like, show, I guess, and wrote something on my chest. I didn't even see. It was too high. But and then I came back and sat with y'all for a little while, and you mentioned that I was being, like, very jokey the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, and, like, I could feel it, too. Because I know humor is a coping mechanism of mine, as anyone who's listened to any episode of this podcast at all may have noticed.
Well, the thing that got me was, like, at one point you made a joke and your dad was like, that's my son. And I was like, I'm gonna cry. Like, I didn't say anything, but I was like, I'm gonna fucking cry right now. Gotta think about something else for a sec.
Yeah, it was when I was talking about the spreadsheets and things, because that is exactly his level of preparedness. And I was like, right, it's what I do when I'm stressed. I'm pretty sure I looked at him and I was like, yeah, it's what we do when we're stressed about things. And he was like, oh, yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. And this is the man that, like, does not talk about feelings. Like, he made a joke recently that he had his feelings surgically removed in 1991. Like, he does not. He is
the
where
year
I get.
You were born. Interesting.
All of. Yeah. He is where I get, like, all of my emotional discomfort from, whereas my mother is, like, the polar opposite, where she shares everything and feels everything so much directly at me. It's a great dichotomy to grow up in. But at one point you said something, and like, because I could feel it too, and I knew that I was being... I know that jokes are my coping mechanism, and I know that there is a range in which my jokes are charming, and there is a range in which I need to shut the fuck up. And I knew I was well into that second range, and it was just, like, I could feel it. I was like, no, it's annoying me too. It's fine. I'm extremely stressed.
You kind of went into this mode that you go into when you teach workshops and stuff, where you're just, like, this charismatic entertainer, just, like, a joke every 10 seconds. Like, it was, like, kind of weird to watch, but also, like, I relate, because, like, when I'm in a stressful situation like that, either I get really silent and withdrawn, or I, like, put on some kind of persona, because, like, how else are you gonna fucking cope? I don't know.
Right. And like, there was no way I'm not the center of attention in that situation. Like, there's no way I can, like, just, like, kind of fade back and stress silently. So that's what happens. But you called me out on it, and I definitely, like, without thinking, it was like, oh yeah, it's a coping mechanism. I get it from him, and pointed to my dad in, like, this room full of nurses and you, and this, like, very uncomfortable with his feelings man was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't argue with you.
Like, yeah, he didn't argue. He just, I just, like, saw his face just like, oh, okay. Yeah. He just kind of, like, nodded and went back to what he was doing. And I was like, well, here we are. This is who I am today.
Can I just, at this point, I started to notice that people were misgendering you.
Were they?
A little bit. Like, a couple of the nurses in the entire experience, I think I saw two or three specific cases of misgendering.
I only remember one.
Okay, yeah. And, I mean, I don't know if you even want to, like, spend time commenting on this, but it just, like, really fucking pissed me off. And I know that this is, like, a hospital where they do other types of surgeries. Yeah. But, like, they also do trans surgeries there. Like, maybe note someone's pronouns on their chart. Maybe ask about them. Maybe don't assume. It just made me so fucking angry. And, like, I didn't want to, like, put that on you at that time because I knew you were already going through a lot. But I wanted to pick things up and throw them. I was really pissed.
Yeah. It is noted on the chart.
Okay. But people were fucking looking at it then, I guess.
I know. Yeah. They have. So I had my surgery done by Dr. Bluebaum Langner, and there is a person in her office that actually is specifically works with the hospital on, like, making sure your gender is in the right place. I got this long email that was like, your chosen name is here, 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 and here. It should appear in this place. This is who you contact if it doesn't, to get it changed. Mm-hmm. This is where, unfortunately, your legal name does have to appear. Mm-hmm. And when I checked in, my legal name, I'm in the middle of changing it. So I had filed for my new driver's license, but I hadn't gotten it yet. I did now, and it's great. But at the time, I didn't, and I was like, you have my legal name, but is there any issue that my legal name is not, the name that you have is not my legal name anymore? Mm-hmm. And I was like, and my documents don't all match, like, my social security card says one thing, and this says the other, like, I'm in this transition, and mm-hmm. they immediately were prepared to change it everywhere for me, and I was like, no, I don't want to deal with that right now, mostly because... Mm-hmm. The name I'm changing it to isn't Bex, because I want a legal one that has, like, a step away from a lot of the work that I do in this world. Mm-hmm. And didn't feel like having that conversation with my dad right then.
Right.
So I told them not to worry about it. But they were very eager to fix that. But, yeah, the one person I remember was immediately after.
Yeah.
And
that
I, like...
was, you, like, put your hand on her arm. She had used a she pronoun. And you were kind of still, like, out of it from the drugs, but you said, he, if you don't mind. And there was this incredibly awkward silence for literally about 3 or 4 seconds where I wasn't sure if this woman was, like, mad or just didn't understand. And I think she actually just didn't understand what you said for a second. Because then she got it, and subsequently I think she was, like, okay about it.
Well, then we walked off alone.
Oh, okay.
Because
that was when
we first got back to the room. And we walked in, and I was like, hey, you know, before... Because I said, I was like, I think I can move. Can I walk from this to my new bed? And she was like, sure. And as I was standing, I was like, I actually feel okay. And since I'm already up, can I pee before I get into a new bed? Because I'm sure I will need to eventually. And she was like, sure. And she was like, bringing me in there... And the whole time she's, like, helping me get to the bathroom, she's apologizing over and over. And I was like, it's fine. And somehow she knew I was trans. She just thought I was a trans woman. Which, okay, I have gotten. And she was like, I just thought you had the other surgery. And I was like, have you looked at the, like, what do you think I'm hiding under this binder? Like, I don't understand. But whatever, sure. But she apologized a couple of times, and finally I was like, you can just stop apologizing and just not do it again. Like, I've gotten real comfortable being like, no, this moment ends when you stop and just fix it. You're the one keeping us in this awkward moment, and you can not.
Right. Okay, we're getting all out of order, though. Go back to... When your dad and I left the room and you were about to be wheeled off to the operating room.
Can I just say one other thing about this woman first?
Yes.
Because it was another weird thing, but it bothered me. Mm-hmm. So, like, as I'm getting ready, she's like, oh, normally we take your, you know, we test your first urine after surgery, but whatever. And I was like, well, then go get the fucking shit. Like get the thing so I can pee in the cup. Like,
yeah.
And she was like, oh, and, like, runs off and comes back and does that. And I was like, all right, like, I can kind of shimmy my pants down and I can kind of sit down. So I, like, sat down to pee, and she was like, oh, you're just going. And I was like, Like, can't do this alone. Like, have you never seen someone pee? You're a nurse. And she, like, ran out of the room to give me privacy. And I was like, you need to come back and help me pull these up. Like, there's no secrecy here.
Yeah.
It's like when I would go to the gynecologist and they put, like, the little blanket on my lap. I'm like, mm-hmm. I've seen my vagina. I don't know.
Yeah, this sounds like a kink scene with insufficient pre-negotiation where she's just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. And you're like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right. Like, I was like, I thought this was normal in this situation. And she was like, oh, sorry. And like ran out. And I was like, all right, I guess. Like,
okay. So one thing that happened that was interesting was like before you got wheeled into the operating room, someone came over to you who was doing a research study on the effects of aromatherapy on surgery patients.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, someone else explained to us that they're, like, always looking for alternates to opiates, especially now that there's, like, so much discourse about the opiate crisis. So they're looking mm-hmm. for ways to manage pain and anesthesia and stuff. So you signed a form to be enrolled in this study, and they were supposed to either give you a control thing, which I believe would be no scent in a mask, and then, like, there was an almond-based one and a lavender-based one, I think, were the options.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where, like, you don't know which one you've been given, and neither does the researcher. It's, like, double-blind mm-hmm. study. So that was kind of cool. I thought, like, I knew as soon as this woman started explaining what this thing was that you would say yes, because you're very like, yeah, do it for science.
Exactly. I was like, I can see no reason why not.
Yeah, like anything that helps.
I'm sitting
you know?
Here anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, this, honestly, I was like, oh, this is a thing I can do and think about while right. I sit here and wait.
Yeah.
So I, like, filled out the form, put this, like, little breather thing on for 15 minutes. Pretty sure I got the lavender.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just annoying because I had a thing on my face. And then I filled out another, like, questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that it helped, but I don't think it didn't help. Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and I also know how difficult it is to sometimes get people for studies and stuff. So sure, yeah. Why not? I'll help you out.
I'm sure that a lot of people in that situation are so nervous that they don't want to introduce any factors that they weren't predicting and weren't ready for. Whereas yeah. you are very like, you want the things you're doing to have a purpose. Like that's why we're doing this podcast right now is because like you want your experience to like potentially help someone.
Right.
So yeah, that made sense to me.
Yeah. And then they said they were planning on taking my vitals again after. And they were like, oh, we don't have time. You're going in now. Bye. I was like, oh, okay. And then the nurse came and just walked me into the OR.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, that's the way that makes the most sense to do it, I guess. but it's weird. I just, like, wandered down a hallway, past the door to the waiting room, two doors mm-hmm. down on the left, walked in, and I was in an OR. I was like, oh, all right. And I, like, walked in, and I was like, well, this room's terrifying. And they were like, oh, is it? But they just kind of had me hop up on the table and then strapped my legs on.
Bondage.
I didn't make a bondage joke. I was so proud of me.
Aww.
Yeah, I almost did. They were like, you know, oh, sorry, is this okay, whatever. And I was like, sure, yeah, it's fine.
This is a Saturday night.
Yeah. It's just like one strap over both of your legs. But I was like, yeah, no, do it. I don't want to, like, fall off the table or kick someone or something. Like, I don't know. I don't know what anesthesia does.
Yeah.
While this other guy is, the anesthesiologist is, like, starting his IV, and he's talking to me, he's like, you're gonna think about something positive, right? And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna think about something positive. And he's like, all right, you know, well, what are you gonna think about? And I start, you know, telling him, I'm like, well, you know, I'm thinking about this place at home. I'm gonna, you know, I'm really just gonna think about sitting on the couch with my cat because I'm really comfortable there. I know that space. It makes me really happy. And then I'm opening my eyes in another room and I'm like, this son of a bitch.
Time travel.
Like, I was fully expected to count down and he did none of that.
Do you want to know?
Shit, okay.
Do you want to know what we did while you were in surgery?
Yes.
So I walked out to the waiting room with your dad, and he was like, I'm going to stay here. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go to my partner's house because my partner lives about a 15-minute walk away from this hospital. I went over there. Matt was like taking their responsibility very seriously as someone who was taking care of someone who was going to be taking care of someone. Like they were like, I think they were like regarding it as like important to the process that they like make sure I was cool. So we like started, we were like cuddling and then we started fucking, which was probably ill-advised, but I thought the surgery was going to be 3 to 4 hours. And then midway through fucking, I get a text from your dad. I left my ringer on because like medical emergencies.
Right. Fantastic.
Yeah. And he was like, he's out of surgery. He'll be waking up soon. So I was like, oh shit, gotta get out of here. I like threw my clothes back on. Matt was like, more later, I guess. I hoofed it back to the hospital. And when I got there, I tried to go in because I had assumed from your dad's text that I could go in. And they were like, oh no, like he's still, he can't take visitors yet. It'll probably be like another 30 to 40 minutes. I was like, okay. And then I went over and I talked to your dad for a second and he was sitting at a desk doing some research on cars. So
sounds right. Sounds right. Mm-hmm.
So we just sat and chilled for a few minutes.
Yeah, he is currently working on building a Shelby Cobra and has a couple of Mustangs already. He is very excited.
Don't you have a couple of Mustangs already? Worst sex toy nerd joke. Okay, so you wake up after surgery. Then what happens?
So the first thing I see when I wake up are the bluest eyes I have ever seen in my life.
Oh my god. The most handsome nurse that has ever existed in all the land. I swear to god. What was this guy's name? Was it David?
I have no idea. I don't...
I'm 80% sure it was David. Anyway, he was an angel sent from the heavens.
Maybe that's why you think his name was David.
True. True.
But I open my eyes and see this man looking back at me and immediately close them again. And I really think, so my memory of this has me sounding fairly clear. Who the fuck knows if I actually did. But I do feel like subspace kind of prepared me for this because like my brain recognized the feeling and I put my hand on him and was like, hi. Opening my eyes is really overwhelming right now, so I'm just gonna have my hand on you because I find that grounding. Mm-hmm. And dude was like, "Kay." And like the next thing I remember, he's on the other side of the bed, so I don't know if I was like in and out for a second or whatever. Yeah. And I like found his arm again and had my hand resting on him again because it was helping me to just like know where he was and know that there was another human. And all of a sudden, I, like, pull my hand back, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't ask if it's okay if I touch you right now. Is that fine?
He was just like, such a kink educator always.
Yeah? Yeah, I mean, I guess it's good to know that that's part of my programming. I don't know. But then he gave me graham crackers because they wanted to give me pain meds, which I couldn't take on an empty stomach. Mm-hmm. And I remember clearly that my brain had a moment where it was like, you could just not say this in a room to a strange nurse with your father sitting in the corner. You could just keep this thought to yourself, and I did not. And I said, hey, you want to know why they invented the graham cracker? And he was like, why? And I said, it was part of a trend in the 1800s to invent bland foods that they thought would stop people from masturbating. And the guy was like, okay, here are your meds.
Well, this was, like, to me, one of the, like, most special friendship moments of the day, because as soon as he said graham crackers, my mind immediately also was like, oh, Kellogg, masturbation, blah, blah, blah. And then I thought, Bex knows that story too. And then I thought, oh, I bet that Bex is going to tell that story right now. And you did immediately. And I was like, yes. I was like weighing the options in my head though, because I was like, I know that he's thinking about that story right now because I am. But I don't know like whether he's going to make the risk assessment that this is a fair thing to explain to his gorgeous British nurse. but you did. So
I did I'm proud do that. Of you. Well, that was, you know, so in the one column, my father is sitting in the corner of this room. In the other column, this man's beautiful and I can talk about masturbation with him. and write it off as an effect of the drugs.
Yeah.
Because I was still, like, that was part of it, too. I was like, my dad's in the room, but I'm loopy from anesthesia.
So it's so fine. All's well
I'm allowed
good.
To say whatever I want right now. Yeah. And what I want is to tell this amusing story.
This and nurse then I later was so found out. Beautiful. He was, like, just hypnotically beautiful. And he was like, as far as I noticed while I was there, did not fuck up your gender and was like very, very sweet and polite to both me and your dad. And was just like, who are you? I want to have you for every medical procedure.
I know. He was so nice. And then he had to leave for lunch. And I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, get lunch. Oh, is it lunchtime? What time is it? And, like, they gave me a new nurse, and I was like, bye! And he was like, okay, goodbye. but, yeah, he was very sweet. And then, yeah, and I learned, so the loopiness from the anesthesia, but also the pain meds they gave me while I was in the hospital, because I did take the prescription ones while mm-hmm. I was in the hospital. And I learned that they did almost nothing to change how the pain felt in my body, which was not that bad, but we'll get to that later. But they did just completely take away the filter between my brain and my mouth. I just, every thought came out, I guess. So I was like, this is good to know about myself. So as they're wheeling me upstairs to get me into, because when you wake up, you're in this, like, post-op area, and then they bring you up to your room. And they brought me into this elevator.
Can I just talk about the elevator for a second? Because
that's where I was going, but yes.
Okay, yeah. I was, like, kind of worried that I was going to cry too much all day, because I didn't want to, like, stress you out or anything, but I just like cry easily. But I actually didn't cry until we got in that elevator, because there was like a woman operating the elevator. Mm-hmm. I don't know why they need an elevator operator in 2019, but whatever. And you, in your like loopiness, were just like, do you work in here all day? Like, there's no light in here. Like, do you get enough to eat? Do you get enough break time? Like, you were just like really concerned about this woman. And I was behind you and just started weeping silently, because I was like, Bex is like going through so much shit right now, and he's just concerned about this, the well-being of this woman he just met 5 seconds ago. I was like, what the fuck? And then I just pulled it back in and just kept on going.
I do not remember that at all. What I do remember are the three people that came in after that. Like, we stopped at a floor in between on our way up, and three people got on. Mm-hmm. And I was like, hey, how are y'all doing? Like, very cheerful, excited to meet new people. And they were like, you know, we're doing all right. How are you? And I could tell, you know, they know what's happening in my life. They take one look at me and they're like, oh, you just had surgery. and I was like, I'm doing better than you. I'm off from work today. And they were like, that's fair. Well, enjoy your view as I'm like getting out of the elevator and heading. Because what I didn't know is someone's surgery was canceled or something, like something got rearranged, and I got mistakenly put in the fancy room, which was fucking ridiculous. It was great.
So two things happened in the hallway on the way to that room, and I'll tell you these because they were funny and I don't know if you remember them.
I do.
One of them was the guy who was wheeling you on the gurney into the room said to the three of us, I guess based on how we looked, so this was like a good, happy surgery. And we were all like, yes, yes. And he was yes, like, good. Yeah. He had no further questions. That was it. It was lovely. And then we wheeled past what looked to me like a vending machine full of blood samples.
Oh, my God.
And I had that thought, and as soon the moment I had that thought, you said, "Is that a blood vending machine?" And your dad was just kind of like, "Yeah, sort of." Like,
so for context, my father works in a hospital, so yeah. He, I'm sure, sees that shit all the time. But I was like, "What is this vampiric bullshit?"
Yeah, that proved to be pretty helpful, though, because I feel like he was, like, making friends with a lot of the hospital staff. Like, they felt some kinship with him because of his level of knowledge there, so
yeah,
it seemed good.
Yeah. He also, he slept in the hospital with me, because I was only there one night, and he slept on a couch. And I had every single nurse that came in was like, "Does he want pillows? Does he want blankets? Should we move the couch around like this? Can we?" And I was like, "He's fine. He's fine. I promise you, he's fine. He's fine." And like, as soon as that nurse left, the next one came in and I was like, "He's still fine. I promise you. Like, the man, he's got this." And finally I was like, "No, he has worked in hospitals. He's been a paramedic my whole life." And the nurse was just like, "Oh, he's fine." I was like, yeah. "Thank you. I know." Like, one of them was talking to me so much about it that he woke up and they were like, "Are you okay?" And he was like, "I'm fine." And I was like, "Would you see?" One thing I did forget to mention pre-surgery, though. Mm-hmm. The other thing, before they put me out, they had a nurse come over and ask me, in your own words, what surgery are you getting and mm-hmm. who's doing it? Which is a clever question. Like, glad they asked that. But I was like, double mastectomy, you know, top surgery. You're cutting my tits off. Thank you. And she was just like, "Okay." And I could see she was like writing and then just stopped and was like, "Great." I was like, "Is that the right answer? Is that correct? Good. Great."
So we're back in your new fancy room.
Right.
Then what happens?
Then I mostly sit in one spot forever.
Yeah.
I was able to get up and go to the bathroom by myself, but the first few times I always made sure someone was in the room. I spent a little while playing with the little tablet that controls all the things in the room, because that was fun. Mm-hmm. And then mostly just watched a Halloween baking show and every Marvel movie they had on demand.
Yeah.
I made my dad watch Into the Spider-Verse. It was great.
I had a dinner plan that night and wasn't sure, like, how long I should stay. And then when you put on the Halloween baking show, I was like, "Oh, he's fine. Like, he'll be all right."
Yeah. Yeah. I expected to be in a lot more pain than I was.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause one of the things we talked about being really nerve-wracking for me was this idea of, like, waking up in pain and in a different place.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I fell asleep either, which is weird. Mm-hmm.
The time just, like, passed immediately.
Yeah. But I didn't feel a lot when I first woke up, because the anesthesia is still floating around in you. But mm-hmm. also something that hadn't occurred to me is how much the nerves need to regrow.
Yeah.
Before I can really deeply and intensely, like, feel my chest. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of numbness across my whole chest for the first while,
mm-hmm.
Which was kind of weird. But when it did hurt, for me, it didn't get above, like, I think they had a 1 to 10 pain scale and kept explaining it to me, and I was like, no, I'm familiar with this system.
Oh my god, can I tell that pain scale story? This cracked me up so much. When we were in the recovery room, I could, like, hear the woman in the room next to us, but I couldn't see her.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the nurse asking, like, "What is your pain level on a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is, like, the worst pain you've ever felt?" And this woman goes, "I think, like, a 9. And, like, sounding completely normal. And the nurse was like, "A 9. So, like, 10 is the worst pain you've ever felt in your life, and you're at a 9. And she was like, "Yeah, I think I'm at, like, a 9. I'm like,
just real cash.
She like, may well have been at a 9. I just was, like, really cracking up at how casual she was. Like,
"No, I'm dying. It's fine."
That was so good. I hope she's okay.
Like, I'm just picturing someone with, like, a gunshot wound bleeding out. That's about a 9 right now. For me, it never really got above a 3 or a 4, I think, while I was at the hospital. It was a dull ache kind of across my whole chest. I kept describing it to, like, the feeling after chest day at the gym, where it's just this, like, soreness, but it's, like, deep in my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it felt for most of the first week. And I was taking, I did pain meds. So when I was in the hospital, I took the prescription pain meds. And then when I came home, I switched just to ibuprofen and acetaminophen.
Yeah.
Yes. And I was able to kind of alternate those. So they both have a 6-hour lifespan. So I would take one every, I would alternate every 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I did that for a week or so. And now I'm not really on pain meds at all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it hurts, but not terribly. It never gets above, like, I tend to take them sometimes before bed, because by the end of the day, if I've done a lot of work, I get, like, a really deep ache, and I get real cranky.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm moving around a lot more than I was at that time, so I like to be able to feel what's happening a lot more clearly, because if I am going to be up and walking around and, like, trying to pick things up and whatever, I have limited mobility, but I like to be able to feel if I'm getting, like, closer to something that might hurt me.
Mm-hmm. So you watch a million Marvel movies while you stayed overnight in the hospital.
Yeah. I did not get much sleep that first night. I only slept about 3 hours. And I think I was just, I had a lot of energy. I was shivering occasionally, which I actually talked to my friend C about it, who pointed out that that's a very common, like, stress response. Think about the way the animals do it after they're in a freeze state, the way Emily Nagoski talks about in her book. And it's a very similar response after anesthesia, because it's kind of a medically induced freeze state. So I would, like, get these trembles and these shakes and these shivers through my body for the first few days, or for the first, like, day and a half. And I think a lot of that was related to also, like, adrenaline in my system, because my body was like, okay, what the fuck just happened?
Makes sense.
So I had a really hard time sleeping that first night. My appetite was wonky. I wanted food, but I didn't want, like, hospital food. I wanted things that I knew that were familiar. Mm-hmm. So I wish I had, like, brought something with me, because I expected to not have an appetite at all after, or to be really queasy or anything like that, but anesthesia didn't hit me that way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I wasn't able to fall asleep until actually like 3 a.m. And I was listening to a playlist one of my partners made for me of songs that I knew, because I thought of it like the night before I went in for surgery, but I know I find music that's familiar to me really, really grounding. So I asked them to throw together a playlist for me of songs that they knew I liked, that they knew I was familiar with, they knew, you know, I knew all the words to, whatever. And I thought of that at, like, 3 a.m. And listened to that, because it was just familiar enough to, like, keep my restless mind engaged, but not interesting enough to keep me awake. Because, like, let's be honest, I'm not going to fall asleep on Captain America. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and speaking of your partners, like, one of the tasks that you assigned to me was, after you woke up from the surgery and everything was fine, I had to text or message all of your, some partners and some close people to let them know. And one of them got back to me and was like, take advantage of the fact that he's, like, fucked up on drugs and take some videos of him, like, doing some weird loopy shit. And I was like, okay, but that didn't really happen. You didn't really have, you weren't really that loopy. It was fine.
Yeah. 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 She told me she did that. She's like, I wanted, like, silly, goofy videos of you and there was nothing. And I was like, yeah, sorry. Just.
Yeah, there really wasn't.
Give me weed next time we visit. There will be countless goofy videos. I don't, but I think my body, like, kind of immediately woke back up into that entertainer mode.
Yeah.
And that, like, foggy feeling was definitely, it wasn't exactly the same as Subspace, obviously, but it was adjacent enough that my brain was kind of like fell into those patterns at first too, which was cool. Like, it was not as foreign as I expected it to be.
Yeah. Cool. So that was like a pretty good wrap up of your hospital experience.
Yeah.
I think overall, like, better than expected.
Yeah.
And I think your preparation and the intensity and thoroughness of your preparation really, like, made a lot of this stuff easier. Like, you were very well researched. You had all the stuff you needed. There were very few, you know, surprises or curveballs, which is, I think, ideal for this type of situation.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we'll do an episode eventually on Bex's recovery process, which is like a whole thing. But I know that right now you're still kind of in the middle of it. So it'll probably be a bit before we delve back into that. But if you do have any questions on that or on any of the other top surgery stuff, you should send us an email at thedildorks@gmail.com and we'll see if we can address it on air.
Yeah, because I do definitely want to talk about even just the difference between the first week to the second week.
Mm-hmm.
In recovery was like really drastic, because the first week I was like exhausted the whole time, and by the second week my brain was kind of back and my body still isn't quite there yet.
Yeah.
So that was a whole new level of frustrations where I was like, I want to do all the things and I can do none of the things. And now I'm getting my drains out in a couple of days' time from this recording. And I'm sure things are going to be very different once that's done, too, because they're just, I mean, practically really annoying. But also, I've spoken to a lot of people that said they just instantly felt a lot better once they were out, which makes sense. I shouldn't have foreign things sticking out of my body all the time. I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Dildorks. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice, and you can listen to my other podcast. It's called Question Box. Where's your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at bextalksex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at bextalksex. Together, we're The Dildorks. We're at Twitter and Instagram at The Dildorks and at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. Brings us up in the charts, makes us easier for other folks to find.
Thanks so much to Protodome. He did our theme song. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. Alright, thanks for joining us for this episode of The Dildorks. So nice to what the fuck was I gonna say? It's fine. I just found this sheet of paper where I was taking notes while recording Question Box, and I don't really know what it means, because it says, what's a movie you're embarrassed you love watching? That's just a regular QB question. But then it says, uh-huh. A dog happened, deeper secrets, final confessions, leather, facial hair, food play, which is like a kinky poem, kind of.
So what it is a scavenger hunt. What we need is for someone to go listen to the Question Box episodes and tell us what episode you were recording when you made those notes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.